Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into the Next Pats podcast. I'm Phil Perry. We've got a tremendous guest for you this week. It's Jonathan Jones, Patriots Corner, still a Patriots Corner until he reaches free agency come the start of the 2023 NFL year. We will be talking to him about free agency. We'll be talking to him about the 2022 season, how he shifted from the inside where we have seen him play and excel for so long, to becoming more of an outside corner. How did he deal with that transition? Does it remind him of any other positional transitions, wink, wink, he's made in the past? And does he feel as though there's a chance he'll be back in Foxborough for 2023 and beyond whenever he determines his whereabouts for next season? It's all coming up in a fantastic interview. We're also going to talk some Shrine Bowl. Don't worry, you draft Knicks. I know you're out there. I know you're hungry for some Shrine Bowl content. The Senior Bowl is actually going on. The practices for the Senior Bowl are going on as we speak. We're recording this on Thursday, so we'll do some Senior Bowl intel. We'll get you some of that coming up on future podcasts, but we'll focus the end of this week's podcast on the Shrine Bowl and some of our takeaways from there. But first, let's get to our interview, our one-on-one with John Jones. There he is. There's our guy, Jonathan Jones, Patriots cornerback. Certainly still a Patriots quarterback, a cornerback, officially still a Patriots cornerback for the foreseeable future. We'll talk about that. But John, thanks so much for being with us for a little bit here, man, on Next Pats.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
So we are recording this on Monday morning, just after the conference championship games. And so I did want to ask you a little bit, especially about that Chiefs game, because you're a guy who has a lot of experience trying to defend Patrick Mahomes. He's going back to another Super Bowl here. We have a ton that we want to hit on here in our conversation with you, but I did want to start out by asking, man, especially after watching that game last night, what's the most difficult thing about defending a Patrick Mahomes offense? Because even though you guys didn't see him this year, you've defended those Chiefs teams quite a bit over the last several years. And man, even on one ankle, apparently, he looked as good as ever last night. So what's the most difficult thing as somebody who's going into a game against that guy and Andy Reid? What do you say to yourself to make sure that you're putting yourself in the best positions to succeed?
Man, it's a tough matchup. It's one of those guys. I mean, you hear a lot about quarterbacks. He can make every throw. Patrick Mahomes can make every throw. I mean, throws that aren't even technical throws, you know, he'll pitch it out. He'll get the ball out. And at the end of the day, when he can always find guys open, it doesn't matter. You know, they were kind of depleted yesterday, a receiver, and guys stepped up. And he's just one of those guys that no matter, you know, how the game is going or what happens, he just has a knack for getting the ball, you know, his playmaker's hand.
And they're so creative, too. You know, he's creative in the moment. It seems like Andy Reid is willing to be really creative, too. You know, we saw a few weeks ago that, you know, I don't know what you want to call it, the merry-go-round huddle or whatever it was that they tried to pull off. And like, I could see you laughing. And it, on the one hand, I could imagine professional athletes looking at that and being like, okay, what are we doing here? Like Joe Tooney, what are we do? Could you not have put a stop to this, Joe Tooney? Joe Tooney's in the middle of that thing running around like he's at the playground somewhere. But then last night, Jonathan, it looked like they tried at least one. And it looked like they were thinking about maybe a couple more lateral plays, like hook and lateral plays in non-desperate situations. What did you think about when you saw them try to pull that off? I think the first one was in the first quarter.
I think it's interesting. I mean, if you take it back, I don't want to go to rugby. You know what I mean? You take it back for football's evolution of rugby or pitching back. And I think if offense to start to, you know, continue to add that in. I think that's just another element that you have to prepare for down the field. You know, obviously you have to worry about turnovers and things like that, but just having the ability to trust in your guys to make those plays and to call those plays. Like you said, as a coach, to actually call that play, you know, that takes a lot of trust.
And you're somebody who had a locker, I think, right next to Nate Ebner for a while. So yeah, you probably get, and you know, Patrick Chung, I know he's gotten his feet into the rugby game now as well. Like, those are guys that you played with for a long time. Yeah. Do you think that's coming? Like, is that just sort of a one-off kind of a goofy thing for Andy Reid to try? Or do you think that's sort of the next evolution of your game?
I could see it. Why not, you know, make, you know, a defense continue to make plays. You know what I mean? I think if you look at a lot of the plays, big plays that are made, a lot of them are scramble plays. They're not how you've drawn up, you know, the 5-yard slant. You have, you know, some of those. But most of the plays, the big plays, are like scramble plays and loose, you know, backyard plays. So I don't know, you know, bring backyard element back to the NFL. You know, hey, who knows? We could see it happen.
You know what? I should have been smarter. Like, asking the defensive guy, you know, who's got a knack for getting his hands on the football himself. Hey, would you like to see more laterals? And you're sitting there. Yeah, hell yeah. Give us more of those laterals, you know, more opportunities for footballs on the ground. Exactly. For me to get my hands on that thing. Yeah, okay. I'd be down for that. How about on the defensive side, just again with this Chiefs team, Jonathan, one thing that stuck out to me is I think they've got 4 rookies in the secondary that are playing and playing a lot. Yeah. How does that happen? You know, understanding as you do, just how important it is to be able to communicate and function in a variety of different roles, depending on whatever the offense is doing. Those are things that are really strong suits of your game. Yeah. How are they able to function with that many young guys on the back end, you think?
I mean, it has to be coaching, you know, to get young guys ready to play and play for that long. It has to be some coaching along the line, and those guys, you know, have to be prepared. Because when you're young, you haven't seen the repetition over and over to where, you know, the play call isn't second nature. You know, you're processing a lot, you know, as a young player. So that's a tribute to those guys. They're probably studying, you know, and going the extra mile, because like I said, it's the playoffs. You know, young guys got to step up, and they've done that.
You're a guy who had been in that spot before. You know, obviously you come into the league as an undrafted rookie, and they've got rookies. They've got a 1st rounder. They also have a 7th rounder and a 4th rounder. So it's not all guys that were necessarily drafted, I'm sure, to play right away. But to get them up to speed, you know, we talk a lot about Andy Reid and just how good he is. But Steve Spagnuolo on the defensive end for Kansas City, he's been around for a long time. And that's probably one of the reasons why, to be able to get through to some of those young guys and get them to contribute as much as they did. It's pretty impressive. How was this year for you, Jonathan? You know, you've obviously, there have been years where you're still playing this time of year, but as you have maybe some opportunities to reflect back on this season for you, you know, guys like Devin McCourty have really praised you all year. We had Devin on the Patriots Talk podcast last week, you know, praising you for your ability to really play a different position. We're accustomed to seeing you on the inside playing that slot role, and you know, this past year, you're on the outside a lot and excelling. Yeah. What was this year like for you? How big a challenge was that for you to be able to shift in terms of what you're doing on the field the way you did?
I enjoy it. I embrace it, honestly. It was a little bit different. You know, got halfway through training camp. You know, they kind of came to me asking, you know, about playing outside. And, I was up for it. I think a lot of people forget the Rams Super Bowl. I moved to safety, you know, for the Rams Super Bowl. I had never played safety, you know, before that. So I just enjoy and embrace, you know, new challenges and just expanding my game and knowing that I have the tools, you know, to do those things, and then just going out there and execute. My teammates, the pass rush, those guys make it easier for me. Being in the locker room with a good group of guys, it just makes it easy for me to go out there and kind of do my job. And then like, obviously being in year 7, having a good understanding of the defense and everything like that, it just makes it a lot easier.
I think that's one of the reasons why you're sort of a classic Patriot, John, or a prototypical Patriot. I mean, you've played so many different spots and in key situations when the team has needed you. You, again, not drafted, and yet still become one of the team's most important players. You know, there's a handful of guys like that have been on this team that have won championships the way that you have. And I think that makes you sort of like a staple piece of this team. Now, as has been the case with other staple pieces of the team, I'm wondering if there was some motivation going into this year, because as Bill Belichick tends to do, he's always trying to reload the roster and get new guys in. And, you know, we were watching the draft last year and they draft two corners in the third and the fourth round. And I'm wondering if you're looking at that yourself saying, man, I'm in a contract year here. And, you know, Bill's looking to get younger. You know, we've heard that a lot from guys over the years. So were you motivated at all by what happened back in the spring, maybe propelled you in some way? I know you're always motivated, but maybe in some way propel you to have the year that you had this past year?
Not so much. I wish I could say it was, but not really. I enjoy bringing in those younger guys. You know, I'm at that age now, kind of where I came into the league, year 7 or 8. That's where Devin and Pat and those guys, that's kind of took me into their wing. So being able to go through that, you know, as one of those younger guys, you know, I embrace it. I enjoy bringing them along, you know, helping them, you know, hopefully get to year 7, have a year 7, and to just get to where I am in my career. But I love to play football. So, you know, anytime there's competition, if we're, you know, throwing rocks, I'm going to compete, you know, and that's just who I am, you know, to my core. So it wasn't really extra motivation. It was just, you know, a chance for me to take, you know, the next step in my career, my journeys. Like Devin always say, hey, you're the leader, you're the next guy up. So taking that step in my journey.
Yeah, how seriously do you take that part of your role with the team, Jonathan? Because Devin and Matthew Slater and some others have been pretty open about the fact that, hey, we're not going to play forever. You know, we need that next wave of leadership to come along. Do you relish being one of those guys, as Devin clearly has communicated that to you?
I do. And it's a responsibility of a standard, you know, like I came in under a standard, from those guys. And you just try to keep that up. You just try to, you can't do anything new. You're not reinventing the wheel. You're just, you know, being a guy who's been around of the standard and knows the standard and kind of convey that to the guys, you know, in the locker room, maybe in a different way than maybe the coaches can't, just having those leadership, you know, within the locker room.
What did you think of those two rookies between Jack and Marcus, the Jones brothers, as you called them during the year, you know, your little brothers? You know, I think they exceeded expectations in terms of expectations that maybe were formed on the outside of the building based on how they played this year. But what did you see from them and how good can those guys be?
And they came in and they were, you know, from the spring when they first got in, they just bought in to learn, to be a part. You know, I'd say Jack, he's very competitive. Marcus is a smart player. I think between the two of those guys, you know, they're both, you know, great players in their own respect, and they got bright futures ahead of them. You know, I'm excited to watch them as they continue to grow.
One of the things that I remember hearing from Devin early in the season, I think it was in training camp, was, I mean, those guys have great feet. As a defensive back, you hear that. What does that mean? Explain to us just how important that is, and how important has that been to your game?
Yeah, completely. I mean, it's always the concept of feet before hands. You know, if your feet can move your body there, you know, once you get there, you can make the plays, you know, with your hands and pass breakups. Some of those guys have, you know, quick feet. You know, Jack's explosive. He's a slim guy, but he's very explosive, you know. And Marcus, you know, has a strong lower body, good legs, speed, obviously. So, you know, both of them can get where they need to get with their feet, you know, from the line of scrimmage throughout the routes. They're just two good guys, you know, to play with.
Okay, so I'm hearing all this, the respect that you have for these young guys and how much you appreciate being a leader on this team, John. And I also know that you're headed into free agency for really the first time in your career. You're on your second Patriots contract, but they extended you before you got through that thing. How complicated are the emotions, understanding how much you've enjoyed being a part of this team, being a leader on this team, but also looking ahead toward free agency? And I'm sure there's some excitement associated with this time as well for you.
Definitely. It's like I said, a lot of emotions from my adulthood has been spent, you know, in New England. The things I've been a part of, the things I've had the opportunity to be a part of in my career there has been a blessing. So, just going into free agency, taking everything in stride, you know, one day at a time. And just enjoying the process, enjoying the journey, you know, something new for me.
Patriots fans are going to be screaming at me if I don't ask, what is the likelihood that you'll be back in Foxborough for 2023 and beyond?
I would hope so. You know, like I said, that's, you know, where I've spent my career. It's what I know. It's what I love. I mean, New England is home for me in that aspect. So we'll see. We'll see how free agency turns out, and we'll take it from there.
All right. Well, we'll have to catch up again with you once free agency has come and gone. But I did want to ask you, like I said, you got so much going on this offseason and so many good things that I think, you know, deserve to have light shed upon them. Like, I don't know how many people know you're one of just five players in the league who are finalists for the NFLPA Alan Page Community Award. And again, there's a lot that you've done both in this community here in New England, but also down where you're from in Georgia, where you are right now, and at Auburn. Obviously, you are an Auburn alum in terms of your football upbringing there down south, and you've done so much. You know, your Week 12 NFLPA Community MVP for creating a Thanksgiving to remember down in Auburn, helped feed 450 local families while schools were closed for the holidays, which is a huge, huge service for those people. Also hosted a campus visit for 10 recruits, covering everything that needed to be covered for those guys, and then came back to Boston, hosted 250 kids at the Blue Hills Boys and Girls Club, and distributed turkeys and frozen meals to 100 more community members. So you have these two communities that you're really obviously very closely tied to. I think a lot of guys, you know, understandably so, are connected to their hometowns. But what is it about this community, Jonathan, that has made you want to get so involved here?
It's been special. It's changed my life, you know, incredibly. And just to have the opportunity to give back to a place that's given me so much, you know, whether it be my hometown, Auburn, or Boston, you know, those areas have all had an impact on my life, have allowed me to get to where I am. So anytime I have the opportunity to give back, you know, it's always a good feeling. It's always a good feeling to be around people in Boston. You know, they embrace the football. They embrace all sports, you know. And so that love that they give us, just having, you know, to be a small piece, you know, to give back to the community, it means so much to me.
And been able to do so much with kids too, right? You know, I know you're an official ambassador for Play Like a Girl, which is committed to helping women and girls in sports and tech. How much fun do you have at some of these events, Jonathan? Because I've seen you, you know, throwing the football around with kids and just your interactions with them, just knowing you as somebody who's in the locker room quite a bit. You know, you're a fun-loving guy. You're a pretty easygoing guy. I think people that have listened to our conversation here probably take away the same thing. But how much do you enjoy that part of it, being able to work with that younger generation?
It's amazing. Like, kids are honest. You know, kids are very brutally honest. And you see the future, you know what I mean? It was once us, you know, being young kids and so optimistic about life. But they just have this, this desire to want to learn and to get to know you, and beyond just the football aspect. Yeah, you come in as a Patriot player, but I think once you take that hat off and you sit at the desk with them and you go out, you throw the football, that you got to put yourself on their level. It just, you know, it brings in a different connection in the kids. They love it. They get to see that, you know, every NFL player doesn't look like, you know, Trent Brown, you know, and stuff that there's some reality, and it looks tangible. You know, when I walk in the room, I think for a lot of people, for a lot of those kids, it's tangible, and they can kind of see that, you know, it's a good feeling.
Well, one of the things, you know, having to do with, again, that younger generation, that I found interesting, because this is right here in our backyard, and I was just at Burke High School talking to some middle schoolers. But you're doing something with the Burke Middle School. You're building STEM labs and programming with iRobot for both Burke and St. John Paul II Catholic Academy in Lower Mills. Can you tell us a little bit about that? What does that mean? And why is tech important to you, Jonathan? Because this pops up on a few of the different off-the-field endeavors that you're involved with.
Yeah. Well, growing up, I was always just into building things and how things work. So engineering was going to be my major when I got to college, but it kind of conflicted with, you know, football scheduling. So I set up for business, but, you know, engineering and tech was always like dear to me. It was always what I loved. And I knew that that's the future, you know, coding and things like that. Kids are going to have to know how to do those things. It's the reality of their future. So giving underprivileged kids an opportunity to be just as accessible to those things as, you know, some of their other counterparts, I feel like it's my part of, you know, my part and my duty.
Well, anybody listening to this can learn more about everything that you're doing.
Yeah.
Everything that you're doing through the Jonathan Jones Next Step Foundation. You can go to jonathanjonesnextstep.org and learn a lot more about Jonathan there. And then we will find out the winner of the Alan Page Community Award, the Alan Page Community Award during Super Bowl week, I believe, right? So we'll potentially be seeing some hardware headed your way, depending on how that goes. But man, you're a busy guy, and there's so much going on. You're coming back up to New England in April. I understand that. But in the meantime, and I think later today you're going to do this, a little birdie told me you're working on your pilot's license. You're learning to fly.
Yes.
First of all, where do you get off, sir? Playing. All right. So you're already playing. Like, what is? It can be a pretty dangerous sport. But you've said no. I would like a little bit more risk in my life, and I'm gonna go learn to fly here. In all seriousness, that sounds very exciting. How did you get interested in wanting to do that, and what goes into that to even pick that license up?
Oh God, I've kind of been always into like building and machinery. I drove four wheelers, motorcycles, everything growing up. You know, jet skis, anything with a motor in it, you can pretty much find me doing it. And then aviation just kind of piqued my interest, and so I kind of researched and looked into, you know, what all it took to get your pilot certificate. And so I kind of began that journey, you know, during the season. Most people didn't know, like, I was doing that, you know, during the season while I was playing. I tried to keep it under wraps for the most part, you know, because you have a bad game, people say, oh, it's because you're worrying about flying. But it's something else, you know, something to add into my hat of things I enjoy to do. And like I said, just something different to say.
Now, so when you're getting your hours in, mm-hmm. what are we flying here? As somebody who has no idea about anything having to do with planes, what are we talking about here?
So I started in a Cessna 172. It's basically the starter for most people who get into aviation. And then I recently switched over into the Cirrus, the SR-20. I think that's kind of the path I'm headed now. Just getting my hours in now from soloing to up into my check ride. So hopefully here in the next, you know, month or two, I have my check ride, and my goal is to knock it out by May to have my license.
How many hours do you need?
Minimum is 40. The average is at 60. So I'm about 30 right now. So hopefully I can
get in there.
Yeah. Good weather days. Get some more good weather days. It's kind of hard, you know, during the season, you know, try to do it on maybe a Tuesday or a Monday, you know, morning or something like that. But then weather, New England weather isn't the friendliest to learn. But yeah, I've just enjoyed it. I've enjoyed it. It's something different. And there's so many different components that go into flying, whether it's weather, aerodynamics. It's so much that goes into it that you're always learning.
So what's more intimidating, you know, staring at the runway during one of your first flights, understanding that now you've had many, it sounds like, or one of your first team meetings with Bill Belichick as a young player after playing a lot, probably for the first time, I don't know, maybe year one or year two of playing a lot for the first time defensively and trying to sit in a defensive meeting with Bill.
Yeah. I'll take the runway all day. I'll take the runway all day. Oh man. Some of those early meetings, I can still hear the voices now. So yeah, I'll take the runway.
Is this okay? Just to make sure we're safe to publish this, Jonathan, right? If Bill comes across the next Pat's podcast here, he's not going to say he's not gonna be calling you up on the phone and saying, I didn't know you were flying during the season, Jonathan.
No, I think he knew. I think he knew. I think it got mentioned to him once or twice. I'm not sure where he put that in his file with everything he had going on, but yeah, I think it may have came across his desk once or twice.
He probably respects it deep down. He's a guy. He likes a motorsport or two. We've seen him out on the boat before down at Nantucket. There's video of that somewhere at NFL film. So he probably appreciates that
for sure.
Well, Jonathan Jones, thanks so much for being with us here, man. On Next Pats, it's been great. It's been great to pick your brain a little bit on some football stuff, but also to hear about all you're doing off the field as well. And when you come back up to New England, we've got to get you in the studio, and we'll pod some more then. All right.
That sounds good. Sounds good. Appreciate y'all for having me.
All right, so some great stuff in there from Jonathan Jones. Love to hear what he is going to be busy doing this offseason in terms of all of his charitable endeavors, his hobbies, which now include flying. Must be nice. I'm just not that brave. That's all. I'm just not that brave. Also interesting to hear from a football perspective that he is hoping to be back in New England. I hope so, is how he put it when I asked him about the likelihood of his return to New England. Clearly, he'll be doing whatever is best for him, his family, his future as a football player. But he also clearly feels as though New England is home to a degree. He has these two communities that we talked about that he wants to be so involved in because he enjoys them both. So his hometown in Georgia, he's spending a lot of time there, and he will continue to do so, I'm sure. It feels like for him, the Foxborough area, the New England area, has become home to a degree as well. And not just the area, but the team. He feels such a strong bond with this team and with the culture that he has seen develop around him and that he's been a part of developing himself. His teammates will tell you, this guy's a leader. I think just in terms of the way that he goes about his job, his willingness to do just about everything. He started out as essentially a core special teamer, worked his way into a critical role on the inside. This past season, worked his way to a critical role on the outside. He's played some safety in the past, and that is one little sidebar that I would like to bring us all into right now, because if the Patriots are looking for a safety this offseason, because maybe, perhaps, they catch wind that Devin McCourty isn't going to be playing in 2023, and we'll see where his decision lands on that front, McCourty's, that is. Why not bring back John Jones to play that position? Now, would he be open to that? That I'm not sure of. Would he want to make that move full-time? But again, this is somebody who's been willing to do whatever the team needs. He really is a classic Patriot in that sense. And if it keeps him in New England, where he would like to be, where he has enjoyed being, and if the Patriots are looking for a spot for him after having drafted two young corners that they would like to be staple pieces of their secondary for the foreseeable future, is not safety maybe the best spot for John Jones? That is the quarterback position of the secondary. And I mentioned, hey, you never know if he actually wants to be there full-time or not, but he might be. Knowing how he knows Devin McCourty and how he respects Devin McCourty and how he respects the way that McCourty went about his job, the way he would respect the difficulty of that job and the importance of that job and the Patriots defense and Bill Belichick's scheme, would he not view that in some ways as an honor to be the guy to fill in for McCourty and try to fill those shoes? And McCourty is one of the best players in Patriots history. That's how he'll go down on the defensive side of the ball. One of the most accomplished, a red jacket, Patriot Hall of Famer for sure. But I could see if McCourty ends up walking away, John Jones filling that role and filling that role well. He can tackle. We know that's critical at that position. You're the last line of defense, but he's smart. He's played a variety of positions in the secondary. He understands everyone's responsibilities, play to play, series to series, game to game. He has good ball skills. We've seen him make plays on the football when he gets those opportunities. On a team that really does not have a true successor already in-house for Devin McCourty, it's not Kyle Duggar, in my opinion. It's not Adrian Phillips. It's, you know, Jabril Peppers is a free agent. It's not him. Those guys are closer to the line of scrimmage types of safeties. Maybe John Jones should be the guy, especially if they view Marcus Jones as a true slot corner. Now, I would try Marcus Jones at free safety too, and bring back John Jones, make him a captain next year. He's the veteran voice of that secondary moving forward. Again, if McCourty ends up retiring, and then you have John Jones in the slot, Jack Jones on the outside, Jalen Mills on the outside, and maybe you put the second year guy, Marcus Jones, back there at free safety. The only issue that I might have with that, if I'm Bill Belichick, is that that is the quarterback position of the defense. And do you want to trust a young player, a player who's very new to that position, which again, John Jones would be too, but he's played some safety. Would you want to give that job from McCourty to Jones? Maybe, you know, McCourty himself, he took on that role early in his career, and Marcus Jones certainly is viewed as an intelligent player. And so maybe he would be completely capable of handling that role. Again, great ball skills, right? They play him on the offensive side of the ball, but also a very willing tackler. He is completely willing, surprisingly so sometimes, given his size, to throw his body around and put himself in harm's way for the betterment of the team. So he could be a fit back there as well. That's an idea that I've kicked around as well. But the more I think about John Jones coming back, everything he would bring back for this team, for the community, and the leadership that he would bring to the table in a year where the Patriots might be losing a good deal of that, whether it's Devin McCourty or Matthew Slater or both to retirement, throw Jacoby Myers into the mix. He's in a completely different category than those two veterans that I just mentioned. But Jacoby Myers is one of the most well-respected guys on the offensive side of the ball. He's not a captain in title. He might be if he ends up re-signing with the team, because I think he's viewed in that light by teammates. But you could lose a promising young leader via free agency. You could lose two veteran leaders via retirement. Bring back Jonathan Jones. Find a place for him. It does look like, just based on how they drafted, and I asked Jonathan Jones about this outright, did you feel motivated? Did you feel slighted at all when you see the team take a slot corner? That's Jonathan Jones's position. They took a slot corner in the third round last year. To his credit, he said, no, I think that speaks to the kind of character that this guy has and just how much he does like being on this team. But it looked like the Patriots were maybe preparing for life after John Jones when they drafted Marcus Jones. And what I would say is, not so fast. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with Jonathan Jones, his future, how he handles everything this offseason. We're hoping to speak to him again soon after the league year begins. We might even be able to get him in studio here in Needham. So would be great to talk to him again soon and figure out how that decision-making process is going for him.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, let's talk some draft. Let's talk some Shrine Bowl specifically. We talked a little Shrine Bowl last week with Shrine Bowl director Eric Galco. Now that the practices are in the books, again, we are recording this on Thursday. They will play the Shrine Bowl game tonight. Although I think what most scouts and coaches will tell you, as is the case with the Senior Bowl, and again, we'll get to the Senior Bowl in future episodes, the practices are really what matter more because of the repetition, because of what you can glean from players after meeting with them behind the scenes, taking what they've learned, bringing it onto the field day after day after day, the consistency that is required to show up in these practices. Throughout the course of a week, when you're in an uncertain environment, you're with new teammates, new coaches, you're trying to absorb as much as you can. How much can you absorb? How much can you spit back at us? Maybe spit back at us days later after we taught you something on Monday. When it comes to Wednesday, the day before the game, do you remember what we talked about? And can you repeat it back to me in a way that I understand and that your teammates might understand? All of that stuff makes weeks like this one that the Patriots spent coaching the West team at the Shrine Bowl so valuable. What DeMarcus Covington, Patriots defensive line coach, is doing out at the Senior Bowl, it's what makes that week for him and other coaches out there as valuable as it is. When you get to get your hands on these prospects day after day after day and see who they are as players, it's easy to fake it one day in one interview or in one even private workout, maybe. but day after day after day as part of a team, you really get to know who these guys are. So the Patriots, I know, feel as though they had a really productive week out there in Vegas. I know they feel like they really got to know some of these prospects out there in Vegas. So I'll go through five names from this West team that I think impressed. I was not out there in Vegas. We're going to the Super Bowl very soon here in Phoenix. So stayed back on the home front here in Needham, doing our shows here, doing our podcasts here, not in Vegas, but thanks to Eric Galco, we have all kinds of film, practice film available to us, which I've been able to watch a lot of. And so I'll give you five names to me that were most impressive on this West team. I'll give you a handful of others that I thought impressed as well. They actually just released a list of all-stars from the West team. The Shrine Bowl did, after taking some opinions from coaches and scouts that were in attendance. So we'll run through some of those names as well. So hopefully you will, by the end of this podcast, be a little bit more familiar with some of these guys, and maybe, just maybe, we'll hear their names on draft day. We'll hear about them being called to play for the Patriots in the spring. The Patriots, of course, drafted four Shrine Bowl players last year: Tyquan Thornton, Pierre Strong, Jack Jones, and Sam Roberts. So how many will they draft this year after having worked with a lot of these guys for a full week? Okay, the first name we have to shout out is Zay Flowers of Boston College. We've mentioned him on the podcast before. Dane Brugler mentioned him. Eric Galco mentioned him in previous episodes. I'll mention him here now. We'll talk about him down the line. Hopefully we'll be able to get friend of the Next Pats podcast, Jeff Hafley, to tell us all about Flowers. 5'9", 182, so didn't crack that 5'10 mark. He has the build of a slot receiver, but even just in one day of practice at the Shrine Bowl, stood out because of his physical skill set. The guy can fly. He has hands. He has the ability to run really crisp routes. The pacing on his routes, I would say, is advanced. It's one of the reasons, along with the athleticism, and we'll see how he tests as he goes through the process here leading up to the draft, but this is somebody who could potentially run in the 4.3s. Now you're talking about maybe a mid-first round pick. You know, the name that I've heard Eric Galco throw out there with us, he mentioned DeSean Jackson. He's also thrown out the name Jaylen Waddle. I mean, if he is anything close to either of those guys, he's certainly worthy of a first round pick. Did nothing this week in Vegas to dissuade anyone of that opinion. So there's one name. Second name will be less familiar to you, but it's one that I think you should take note of. It's Tyrus Wheat. Wheat's an edge defender from Mississippi State. So then and there, SEC, you have to know, as somebody who follows the Patriots, okay, Bill Belichick could be interested. He's 6'2", but almost 270 pounds. And we'll get an arm length on him. I don't think he's going to be Trey Flowers-sized in terms of his arm length, but that frame is Flowers-esque. 6'2", 269. I think Flowers, when he left Arkansas, was 6'2", 265, 264, somewhere in that very same range. And like Flowers, Wheat looks like, and this is what he showed on tape at the Shrine Bowl, a very heavy-handed, edge-setting type of outside linebacker slash defensive end. Strong at the point of attack. We saw him on multiple plays this week get to the edge on a wide zone run and just stack a tackle and blow the entire play up. Did he make the tackle himself? Not necessarily, but you create that traffic jam. You create that nine-car pileup on the edge if you have the strength that Wheat does, and that's the guy who makes the play. You know, we also saw him with some pretty nifty pass rush moves, in my opinion. Saw him rip out a spin move at one point. But again, because of his size and his strength, you can imagine he's got a pretty strong bull rush as well, which he put on display. So that's a name that everybody should be keeping in mind here in New England. Even though it looks like they're set on the edge, Josh Uche, Matt Judon, Anthony Jennings had a good year in the kind of role that I think Wheat would take on, which is a first and second down edge defender. They also still have Dietrich Wise, of course, but he just seems like their kind of player. And if he's available in the middle of the draft, late in the draft, that's a name that we should keep in mind. Then there's Terrell Smith the corner out of Minnesota. We just talked about the Patriots' depth chart at corner. Jack Jones, Marcus Jones, they do have Jalen Mills, but they are, Miles Bryant, throw him into the mix as well. They do not have much size. Smith would give them that. 6 feet, 207 pounds, always around the ball. Whether it was team periods or one-on-ones or seven-on-seven, in the tape that I saw from the Shrine Bowl, he was constantly around the ball. And I know I'm not the only one who took note. Jordan Reed, our friend of the podcast from ESPN, one of their draft analysts there, said this is a day three guy that ended up being one of the best performers during Shrine Bowl week as far as he was concerned. Quote, routinely in position, he crowded throwing windows and was also able to get his head around to impact plays on many occasions. As a former track athlete, Smith's fluidity and speed flashed frequently during the one-on-one portions of practice against receivers. He had two interceptions in 2022. I'm surprised the number is actually that low because, again, he was so good at breaking on the ball, getting his head flipped around, getting in position to get his hands on the football. Saw that consistently in the practices this week from him. So that's another name. If he's a day three guy, why not throw a dart? Again, because he has that size. He has something that the Patriots really don't have in great supply in the secondary right now. Okay, two more names for my top five from the West team this week, and they're both on the offensive side of the ball, and they're both at positions of need. The first one, in terms of being a position of need, shouldn't surprise you. It's receiver Justin Shorter out of Florida, 6'4", 224 pounds. Again, the Patriots don't have a ton of size right now at the receiver position. They have Devontae Parker. They have Kendrick Bourne. Tyquan Thornton, though he has length, he certainly does not have size. 224 pounds at 6'4". You're talking about a true X, a boundary guy. And that's what Shorter looked like. Making contested catches, catches in traffic. I thought there were times where at the line of scrimmage, it was a little helter-skelter. There was a little bit too much effort almost on the footwork right at the line. But then when he would get into his route, very smooth for somebody his size and created a lot of separation. And when he was a little bit more efficient at the line of scrimmage, he looked even better. So this is somebody, again, SEC, good size, gives them something that, you know, okay, Devontae Parker, he tends to get injured. We know that. If you want to be able to have that presence on the outside behind somebody like Parker, maybe you get a young player like Shorter in there, somebody, again, who should be available later in the draft. You get Shorter in there to give you a little bit of depth and some room in terms of his ceiling as somebody who could grow into, because of his physical traits, a pretty special player. We'll see. He's somebody who caught my eye watching this practice film from this week, getting to work with head coach Troy Brown. Now, this next position might not be at the top of your list of needs, but it's near the top for the Patriots, I can tell you. It's Antonio Maffi, who is a UCLA interior offensive lineman. Now, you may hear me say that and say, Phil, didn't they just draft an interior offensive lineman in the first round? What are we talking about here? Yes, they did. Cole Strange at left guard, Mike Owenu, one of their best offensive players, period, at right guard, and David Andrews, their captain and leader. You know, Mac Jones, a captain as well, but David Andrews really that veteran leader on the offensive side of the ball at center. But behind those three, the depth this past year was lacking. And I think that's an area where they would like to shore things up. Now, James Ferentz has always filled in admirably. Smart guy. You could play him at any of the three interior spots, but there's a reason he's a backup. He is limited in terms of some of the things he can do. And so as Michael Wenu gets to the end of his rookie contract, as David Andrews gets later into his career, the Patriots should be thinking about interior offensive line depth. And so Maffi to me is interesting because he has some impressive size, almost Owenu-esque at 6'3", 338 pounds. That's a big boy. Not necessarily in terms of the height, but in terms of that weight, you know, especially after the Patriots just drafted Cole Strange at right around 300 pounds to start for them at left guard. Now, the question to me is, and Maffi had a great week, one-on-ones, team periods, there's clear power there. And in certain schemes, this is where I'm going with this, in certain schemes, I think could be a great player. What scheme are the Patriots running? We know Bill O'Brien's back, right? Will Bill Belichick be in Bill O'Brien's ear about wanting to run more of the wide zone, outside zone, Shanahan, McVay sort of thing that the Patriots have always had in their playbook, but really emphasized, overemphasized, depending on who you asked, this past summer going into the 2023 season. And then they weren't very good at it. And so then they got back to their power game and pulling guards. If it's more of the latter, I think Mafi would be great. So that to me is a prototypical Patriot. I think he's going to end up on our prototypical Patriots list later this offseason. But again, another name to consider there for the Patriots on the offensive line. Handful of other names that I think are worth mentioning. Jake Bobo, not just because it's a phenomenal name, but because this is a guy who has some size, not the fastest guy by any means. I mean, we'll see how he tests, but just based on what we saw in practices, he doesn't look like a 4-2 guy. I think it's safe to say, but good size at 6'4", over 200 pounds, you know, going way back in the Wayback Machine. This won't be way back for everybody listening to this podcast, but it will be for some. You know, I start thinking, okay, who were some Patriots receivers who had good size? They were sort of lower on the depth chart, but you kept them around because they had some special teams value. And if things broke for them right in terms of their development, maybe they could get in the game and be a contributor. Now, it didn't necessarily happen always for these two guys that I'm about to mention, Sam Aiken and PK Sam. These guys are, you know, 6'4", 200 plus pound guys that were role guys that ended up being brought in. And again, were they Pro Bowlers? No, of course not. And I wouldn't expect Jake Bobo to be, but he's somebody who I think could have a role. I know our buddy, Rhett Lewis, another friend of the podcast, a lot of friend of the podcast shout outs today. He compared Bobo to Ben Skowronek from the Rams, who's had a pretty nice last year or two for the Rams in LA. So that's somebody that I would keep an eye on out of UCLA. Looked like he had some athleticism in short areas. So I don't know what he'll run in the 40, maybe in the 4-5 range, maybe in the high 4-5s. But if he has that 3-cone time, or he has pretty impressive shuttle time for somebody with his length, he has some pretty good hands. Looked like he made a contested catch for a touchdown in the red zone on one of the last days of practice this week. You know, that's somebody I could see the Patriots being interested in to get themselves some depth and some special teams depth, if that's what they're looking for. Demario Douglas would be the more explosive type of receiver that the Patriots could be looking for if they're looking for that. Undersized, right? So you'd maybe be looking to play him in the slot, get him off the line of scrimmage, make sure people don't get their hands on him. 5'8", 175. But this guy flies out of Liberty. His nickname's Pop. Pop Douglas out of Liberty. 5'8", 175. I mean, speed to burn. He got a little lost in the sauce, I would say, at times, as many receivers did this week in the one-on-one drills. Just trying to do too much. Trying to make 8 moves in 3 seconds and just, you know, ending up looking like completely unrealistic route concepts or route situations. It's sort of the social media era of one-on-one play where, you know, you're going to do 17 different things at the line of scrimmage and try to make the other guy look bad. And the reality is you just never would do that in a real game. So was there a little bit of that this week from Pop? I saw a little bit of that this week, but when, again, he was more efficient at the line and he was a little sharper in his routes, it was borderline impossible for anybody to stay with him. So again, coming out of Liberty, off to the Shrine Bowl, he sees much better competition. He flashes there, really strong in terms of his tracking of the football down the field. So that's somebody who, if you could use him in the slot to be that vertical slot threat that so many teams have right now, you know, that T.Y. Hilton was, you know, maybe one of the forebearers of. He's a little taller than Pop Douglas. I think T.Y. Hilton was about 5'10", 180, as opposed to 5'8", 175. But that would be the high end sort of comp for Douglas. He was fun to watch this week. One more name really quickly, and it was a name that Eric Galco dropped on us last week. It's Connor Galvin, the tackle out of Baylor, 6'6", 293. So very light. That's somebody that you would want to make sure you're trying to get some weight onto, almost Antonio Garcia-esque. Again, another guy who it will be really interesting to see how he tests, how he moves, because they want those tackles to be athletic enough, quote unquote, is what Dante Scarnecchia used to tell us. Antonio Garcia certainly was that. And as a developmental guy taken in the third round a few years ago, if you could get some weight on him, keep that athleticism, then maybe you have a real player on your hands and you have tremendous value in finding a tackle who could play that you didn't have to go get in the first round, right? Somebody like Trent Brown, who was a third round pick, again, years ago, and the Patriots got him via trade and he had a long winding road to becoming one of the highest paid tackles in the league, which he was for the Raiders. But if you can find starting caliber help in the middle to late rounds at that tackle spot, it is striking gold. So maybe Connor Galvin will be that, whether it's for the Patriots or someone else. Okay, let's go through some of the all-stars for the West team. Just want to shout some of these guys out. And some of them we know of already, and some of them we got a great look at, like Dorian Thompson-Robinson, the quarterback out of UCLA this week. Others, you know, I have to go back and maybe watch a little bit more. Mo Ibrahim from Minnesota. Not the biggest guy in the world. I think the Patriots will be looking for a third down back and a big back. I don't know if Mo from Minnesota is going to fit either of those suits. At 5'7", 203 pounds, it would probably have to be the third down back suit, but maybe he can. Would love to go back and watch a little bit more of him. Demario Douglas ended up being an all-star this week. Nebraska tight end Travis Vokolek is an all-star for the West team. Connor Galvin, who we just mentioned, is an all-star. Antonio Maffey is an all-star. Truman Jones, Harvard's own Truman Jones off the edge, ended up being an all-star this week. Again, these are players that were picked by scouts, coaches, and so it's worth paying attention to players who ended up on this list, because those people are also taking into account how they do in the interviews, how they do behind the scenes. So Truman Jones, love that name. Again, out of Harvard, maybe somebody we should try to get on the pod at some point here, being a local guy and all, right? 6'3", 250 pounds. You got to be at that 250 mark-ish to play on the edge for the Patriots, so maybe he's one of those guys. PJ Mustafer from Penn State, defensive lineman, ended up being an all-star. Drake Thomas, linebacker for NC State. Jalen Williams, a corner out of Indiana. And Trey Dean, the safety from Florida, all ended up being all-stars this week at the Shrine Bowl as well. So we'll be able to dig into those players as we move forward in the draft process here. It's always fun becoming a little more familiar with these people as we get closer and closer to draft weekend. All right, guys. Long podcast today. We had a great, great interview with John Jones. Great to hear about his football year, his football plans moving forward, and all of the off-the-field endeavors that he's got going on. Great to catch up with some Shrine Bowl information as well. Had a lot of fun watching those guys practice this week. We'll do some Senior Bowl talk next week. You know we've got to do some Senior Bowl talk. Hopefully we'll be able to get Jim Nagy on the horn, director of the Senior Bowl. We'll also be at the Super Bowl next week, everybody. So make sure you're keeping an eye out for perhaps multiple. We're going to try to spoil you next week. We'll do multiple Next Pats episodes out in Phoenix as we are out there mingling, as we are among all of the NFL cognoscenti out there in Arizona this week. Should be a lot of fun. Keep an eye out for those episodes. We'll talk to you then.